Hello and welcome to the Taskmaster podcast. Ed Gamble here, host of the Taskmaster podcast. We are currently trawling our way through old episodes of Taskmaster, episode by episode, getting down into that nitty-gritty, talking about it task by task with special guests. We're currently on series 2 of Taskmaster, and this episode of the TM pod, the TMP, as people are calling it out there in the skate parks, they're all calling it TMP. A great idea that. I say the kids are calling it, and then I'll do an acronym of the podcast. A great idea that I've come up with. And then you can all say TMP as a little sort of catchphrase thing, a brill idea from me. So we're currently talking about series 2, like I say, and today we're talking about series 2, episode 4, with Kerry Godliman. Not on series 2, of course. We decided to get a bit of an outside eye for this one, but a Taskmaster expert nonetheless, a Taskmaster champion of series 7. I absolutely love Kerry. She was brilliant on Taskmaster. She's going to be brilliant on the podcast. She really cares about Taskmaster. She absolutely loves watching it. She loves doing it. She's the perfect guest for this podcast. We are going to be drilling down into every task in series 2, episode 4. Now, next week, Taskmaster Series 11 starts. So I'm just going to take you through the schedule of what we're doing podcast-wise. So today, we're releasing this episode, and we're releasing our episode based on Series 2, Episode 5. We're going to be chatting to Richard Osman about that. And next week, we start properly with Series 11, because on March 18th, Taskmaster Series 11 starts on Channel 4 at 9 p.m, and it's going to be every Thursday for the next 10 weeks after that. So, brilliant lineup, as you know. Just an incredible lineup. Lee Mack, we've got Jamali Maddox, Charlotte Ritchie, Mike Wozniak and Sarah Kendall. An incredible lineup. I'm very excited to watch it and start talking about it. So we will be back on March 18th with that straight after the main show drops. So without further ado, this is the TMP with Kerry Godliman. Welcome, Kerry Godliman, to the Taskmaster podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's an honour.
Is it an honour?
I think so. I feel like I'm part of an alumni that I'm really chuffed to be a part of.
You're part of an elite alumni, of course, because you are in the Winners Hall of Fame. What I've decided to call it.
Very tenuously, if we unpick that, it's 1 point in sausage or finger. That is... it's very tenuous, my place in that roll call.
I don't think so. No, because I think you needed to be consistent. You needed to be good. You needed to be strong throughout the series to get to the point where it was down to 1 point in sausage or finger. So obviously, shout out to Jess Napper, who's been on the podcast before, who was 1 point away from.
It was so nearly hers as well. It was so nearly hers.
Did that make you feel more excited and better about the victory that it was only 1 point in sausage or finger, or did it sort of take the sheen off it at all?
I tell you what, honestly, without wanting to sound like a wanker, I was so happy that there was no sheen to remove. It was all just good times. And she's so lovely. We'd all had such fun. And at that last bit, I just genuinely didn't know if it had gone my way or her way. We knew it was close.
Yeah.
And I was just giddy. I genuinely was like, oh, this is all... We're winning. We're all winning.
I think sausage or finger might go down in history as the tensest studio task in Taskmaster history.
Oh, man, it was so intense. It was so intense. And there were bits of that I was so focused. I don't think I've ever been more focused. I felt like Luke Skywalker. I just the intensity of me trying to channel, was that sausage? Was that finger? Just really, really zooming down on that sausage finger moment.
So did you want to win? Is that, I mean, look, I wanted to win. I'll put that out there. I don't feel ashamed of that feeling.
I did want to win.
How do you feel?
Yeah, I did want to win. But you want to do it in that, you don't want to be a wanker about it, do you? But you do want to win. But it's really delicate, isn't it? That sort of like being competitive about clowning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, essentially, we were all wearing big shoes and, you know, squirty flowers. We were all dicking about. And yet to be competitive about that just seems absurd. But yeah, I suppose we all wanted to win, really, because you need to have that spirit to do it, don't you? a bit.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right in that it's a balance. I think you have to want to win a bit to engage in the competition
totally.
Properly.
Yeah.
But
totally.
You have to laugh when things go badly as well.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure I always managed it.
I always like the way that they have like human tapas where obviously there are people that clearly don't give a shit if they win and their presence is equally valuable.
Yes.
You know, so the people like you and me that, let's face it, Ed, we're not that dissimilar in that we did want to win and we were quite focused. Yeah. But you do need the other people that really look like they're having a breakdown and they don't know where they are. You need them as well.
I'd just like to focus on the phrase human tapas there, Kerry.
I knew you'd like that.
I've never heard that before. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
That could be a new name for Taskmaster if there's ever like...
Totally.
If Marvel... ever sue Taskmaster for using the name Taskmaster because that is a villain in the Marvel universe.
They could go to Human Tapas.
They could go to Human Tapas. And I
you've
think
got to have a little bit
it.
Of everything. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a really important thing to bear in mind when you're putting together a Taskmaster cast. Human Tapas.
If you were to compare your series, Series 7, and everyone's a different dish on a tapas menu.
Yes. I love this.
What tapas dish would you say you are?
A staple, I think, like a potato-based.
I'd patatas say, bravas.
Oh, is that what it is? A patatas bravas?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
who I am. That is what I am. And then James was like something a bit experimental where you're like, let's just give it a go. Let's just try that.
Like a prune wrapped in bacon, maybe.
Yes, where it might work out. And but it might not.
Yeah.
I think I'm a more sort of solid potato based thing.
I mean, obviously we're gonna have to go through everyone.
You will have to steer this because your knowledge of food is far superior to mine.
I'll take what you say and I'll work out what Spanish dish best relates to it.
Okay, so Rod would be quite a fiery, I'd say like a peppery, meaty sort of situation. Do you know what I mean? Like,
a chorizo.
Yeah, totally. Chorizo all the way. Which gets us back on the sausage theme. So this is all...
Yeah.
This is linking up. What do you reckon Phil Wang... What was Phil Wang doing? There were moments...
Given his costume, we should have put chorizo for him as well.
Yes, that's true. God, what would Phil be? He'd be an omelette. He'd be a sort of omelette thing.
Yeah, like a tortilla type thing.
Tortilla, absolutely.
Yeah.
A tortilla. Why,
now, why would Phil be a tortilla?
Because he's wearing a yellow suit. That's the And then Jess, what do you think? What do you think for Jess?
The thing is, you and Jess were so close. Maybe the issue was you were both patatas bravas.
Yeah, maybe we were both patatas. One of us had a more cheese base and the other one a chili twist.
Yeah.
Slight or differences.
Maybe Jess would be like a... like a croquetas.
What's that?
It's sort of like a deep fried crispy thing with like ham and cheese on the inside. Lovely. It's delicious. It is a staple of tapas.
Yeah.
But it's got a little bit of flair. How do you feel about that for Jess?
Yeah, no, that sounds perfect. The flair is definitely how I would describe Jess.
I think actually Series 7, that's a great thing because all of those dishes fit together very well.
Yeah.
But you're getting a bit of variety. It's one of the best chosen casts, I think. I think everyone played their role perfectly.
I really loved doing that series. I loved all those people. I had a lovely time with them.
Did it ever... obviously, there were some explosive moments in the studio.
Even the memory of them makes me giggle.
Particularly between James and Rod now and again.
Yeah.
Things exploded. Did it ever feel genuinely tense? Did you ever feel like you might need to step in?
No, I was just a pig in shit throughout the entire thing. And the more cross James got, the more I was like... just so happy. Because there's nothing more fun than James getting cross. It's just funny. It's just hilarious. So the more wound up he got, the more comedy potential I knew was available.
Now, obviously, you picked up the nickname in your series of the Bosch Queen.
I did, yeah. I have mixed feelings about it.
No, mixed feelings is it? So, obviously, it was because you were straightforward with some of the tasks. Bosch just got it done. I believe you would say Bosch now and again.
I do say it now and again. I'm reluctant to say it because I saw on Twitter people are going to try and make you get me to say it. I'm like, oh, crack off.
I feel like maybe for the end of the podcast, I think when we've done the podcast, it should be.
Exactly. Bosch. You've got to sign it off with completion. That's how the word works. I called my tour it because I had such mixed feelings about it. Because there's one side of me that loves it and I know that there's a sort of efficiency that means I get stuff done. And then there's this other side that's quite abrasive and not very patient. And I'm like, oh, I could do with a bit less of that nature.
Yeah. You know?
So it's a bit of duality about that.
But I think when it comes to Taskmaster, I think for some of the tasks, you really do have to just bosh it, right?
You do. And also, but I love the whole kind of variety of tasks, but actually that personality isn't well suited to the ones that require a bit more thought. Do you know what I mean? A bit of planning, a bit of strategy, a bit. I'm like, oh, that's not my strong suit, that, you know. And maths was utterly humiliating.
But that's interesting, because if anything, maths should be the ultimate bosh, right?
It should be.
Because there's rules that are all there. Yeah. So it should just be bosh, 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 big bosh.
Yeah, no, you're right. It should be. But that's the nature of the show, isn't it? It's sort of full of contradiction.
So, yeah, with the more creative tasks where they might say, you've got 20 minutes to tell us what you need, or you've got an hour to plan all of this. In an hour, it's quite difficult to bosh anything in an hour, right?
Yeah, totally. Sometimes I would just be brainstorming. I'd feel like if I just shout keywords at that crew, gaffer tape, Velcro, bamboo canes, spoons, and then they can put it all together and sort of see what I'm trying to achieve.
That poor crew, the entire production crew must have seen the great and good of British comedy have absolute meltdowns.
Yeah. And I love it when you see them. Like, there was one of my tasks, I think it was one of my biggest failures, where I made them dance and they just looked ground down.
I spoke to Jess about this as well, but I think one of my abiding memories of your series is Cul-de-sac. Is that the name of the soap that you did?
Yeah, Cul-de-sac with Donna and Donna.
Absolutely brilliant. And I think that's an example of where you can bosh something out and be creative.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it, because honestly, I think it was my favourite task.
Oh, it's so good. And I think it makes me think, I think you and Jess are one of the ultimate teams. Out of all of the Taskmaster teams.
I loved it that they did a girls' team and a boys' team for our series. I just loved that. Because we definitely clicked. I don't know if we would have done if we'd been with one of the boys. It was just something. And to make, it was like Birds of a Feather goes horribly wrong, wasn't it, Cul-de-sac?
I would watch at least a full half an hour episode of Cul-de-sac.
Me too. I mean, I
don't think you could do much more than that, because it's just so like, it's so back and forth and so high energy. I think at the end of the episode, you'd be like, I'm knackered watching this.
Oh, man, that fight. And we knew from the beginning we were going to have a fight.
Yeah.
It was very clear we needed to have a cat fight.
Yeah, I think you and Jess are definitely on the same page. Patatas Bravas and Croquetas go together like an absolute dream.
Big time.
Whereas
unless you're
boys,
getting off the carbs, then you're fucked.
Yeah, exactly. The boys' team, there's something wrong with all of them, but it's different things.
Oh, man, the boys' team. I mean, there were moments where I was just like, they need a key worker to just get in there and help them out.
Like, Rod will not listen to anyone else.
No.
And
no.
Always thinks he's right.
Yeah.
James was just angry with Rod the whole time. So anything anyone does, he gets angry. And Phil just pombles around like Winnie the Pooh. So it's just one of the most useless teams ever.
Yeah, absolutely. But isn't there something brilliant about the useless teams? My favourite useless team is Joe and David.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
there's
that was
a level of uselessness. Oh, it was a joy. I mean, they made James, Rod and Phil look really focused and efficient.
But the difference is, I think James, Rod and Phil were really trying, but they were just working within their abilities.
Yeah.
Whereas Joe and David just couldn't give a shit.
They'd
stop for a sandwich. Joe, in the last team task of the series, went to the toilet during a time task.
And that shouldn't be so wonderful, and yet it is. They've earned that right.
And I loved them as a team, and I had the added thing of being able to watch them going, I love this, it's really funny, they're not doing well in the task, and then thinking, oh, that's good, that means I get more points. So it's just so many layers to me enjoying that.
Yeah, exactly.
Until I had to be on a team with David Baddiel for a studio task, which everyone knows about.
Yeah.
So is Cul-de-sac one of your favourite memories of the series, and do you have any other favourite tasks?
I love doing that circle in the snow. That was a standout moment for me.
You're so proud of yourself.
Oh, man, the joy. But again, that sort of luck, it's luck, isn't it? Like the one point in Sausage or Finger. It was like pure chance that it was snowing on my day.
Yeah.
And I got a massive piece of paper in the garden called snow. So that was a high... there were just so many. The quick change. I love doing the quick change. And I couldn't believe when we all were in the studio. Did you find when you were doing it that you assumed... I always assumed that I'd taken the route one. I always just thought, well, surely everyone's going to do that.
Yeah.
And then when you watch it back and you see that they're all coming at it differently, I just couldn't... The ways they approached that quick change, as I was watching them fuck it up, I knew I'd smashed it. I was like, wow, if he's saving my video to last, I know I've smashed that task.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because I do not know what was James doing? What was he doing?
I've got no idea. And the video of Phil as well.
Wow, Phil.
Behind the door, getting changed slower than I get changed on a normal day.
It's like you just want to reach into the video and go, did you even read the task, Phil?
Quick change, Phil. So let's talk about the prize task in this series 2, episode 4. It's coolest blue thing, which is a nice category, I think. Did you enjoy the prize task?
I love the prize task. That was one of my absolute favourite things. And I stand by all my choices. I don't look back on any of them and go, oh, I didn't do very well. I loved all the things that I came up with, and I loved all the things everyone else. I thought in our series, the prize task was a lot of, there was a lot of fun to be had with that round.
Yeah, I think they were strong. I think for some reason in series 10, they were all just quite bad. It was very funny, but they were all quite bad at prize tasks.
Yeah.
They didn't think it through enough, or they didn't realise how much focus there would be on the prizes.
Yeah. And I love it when Greg's really disappointed with prize tasks.
Yeah, where he's really like, funny.
Screw you, raise your game. And I love the way you want to impress him with those prize tasks. I engaged with it. Greg's a big part of it. You want to like make him laugh or surprise him or, you know.
Yeah, looking back at myself during those prize tasks, it's pathetic. Like, I'm supposed to be friends with Greg and I'm sat there going, excuse me. What about this that I brought in, please?
I love that section.
But I felt like, especially with your prize task as well, I think Greg has an innate respect for you that definitely helped.
Do you reckon?
And I think you're kind of on the same page, especially with, obviously, the laminator.
Yeah, the laminator was a glorious moment.
This was really hard for me because I love stationery.
You think I don't?
Well, I don't know if you love it as much as me.
Oh, I do.
Because I love it the most.
Yeah?
Right.
I think I know what it is. As a stationery connoisseur, instinct tells me, because I know what the king of the stationery items is.
Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if it's the same thing?
And I genuinely don't know what you brought in. Should we say it together?
Yes. One, two, three. A laminator!
So Doc Brown brought in Feel No Threat by the Average White Band.
Yeah.
Which he claimed was the coolest blue thing. Because it had a blue cover.
Yes.
I actually think, even though it was the coolest blue thing, I think it was too cool for Greg to like.
Do you know what? I mean, shall I say now what mine is? Because mine's quite influenced by
Doc. Yeah,
please. Right, so I probably would have gone down, probably because I watched the episode and Doc, I would have either gone for the album Blue by Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
Or Kind of Blue. What's that? Is there a Miles Davis one called Kind of Blue?
Yes, I think it's Miles Davis.
So I'd have gone for one of those two. It probably influenced by Doc, but he didn't pick... I mean, I know he's a muso, so obviously his music knowledge is better than mine, but everyone's heard Joni Mitchell and Miles Davis. They're two, like, known, more classic blue albums.
But I think that's too cool, Kerry.
Do you think?
I'm not sure how it would have done.
Let's go over the brief, Ed. the coolest blue thing.
Right.
Now, do you undermine the brief? Do you subvert the brief? Or do you stick to the brief? This is delicate.
Yeah, it is delicate. And it totally depends on what mood Greg's in.
Totally depends, which you cannot predict. He's a very unpredictable beast. And also, sometimes when you're super earnest, you can become like a wanker. And there's something to get out of that, isn't it? Heightened earnestness can be really funny. So I would go, I'd go in hard on the cool angle and say Miles Davis.
Do you want to know what I would have done? I've thought about it a lot.
Yeah, of course.
I would have got a cool bag, and I would have had it signed by all the members of Blue.
Yeah, I mean, that's brilliant. You've gone for the literal, you've gone down that road, haven't you?
Yeah, yes. So literal.
Yeah.
But again, depends what mood Greg's in. He could have just said, I don't like the boy band Blue, I hate it.
And he might have thought that was clever, or he might have thought it was smart ass. And you just can't be sure.
He normally thinks things I do are smart ass, to be honest. Then I go, little Ed.
Oh, look, well done you. See what you've done there.
Yeah. So Joe and John both interpreted Blue in the sort of raunchy,
bit of blue,
exactly.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we should have seen that coming with Joe Wilkinson, who is, I think if I had to describe him as someone who'd never seen him before, I'd describe him as the embodiment of Seaside Grot. Now, you worked with Joe on a number of occasions. Is that something that, would you expect that sort of thing from him?
I would on Taskmaster, not in a green room, but on Taskmaster. Yeah, that is what I would expect him to bring to the table, yeah.
The seagoing sex pot book, that's what
I would expect it from him, but I wouldn't expect it from John.
It was a surprise with John, and I thought Joe had it in the bag. I thought he's won it.
Yeah.
It's a very funny way to interpret it.
Yeah.
He had a funny way of backing it up, talking about how much he loved it and that it was his favourite book.
Yeah.
And then John
came along with that weird little pig thing.
The pig Lanzarote fridge magnet. Absolute filth bag. And obviously it's then on a level with Joe that it's filthy, but just the fact it's a pig means it just pips Joe to the post.
Yeah, it just, just nudged it in there. It was a definite sausage or finger.
Yeah.
Pip to the post.
Yeah, it really was. It was a sausage or finger.
Yeah.
A sausage in this case. Richard brought in his son's riot helmet, which leads me to ask a lot of questions about their home life.
Yeah, I didn't get that. He went with obscure.
It was very obscure. Mm. I feel like there may have been more of a story there that we didn't get.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes, there can be loads of fun to be had and then it doesn't make the edit. And unfortunately, sometimes that happens. And I bet that was one of those moments.
Yeah. Sometimes with the prize task, you just need to be able to sum it up in a few words.
Yeah.
And then get out. Mm-hmm. I mean, Catherine brought in a blue dog collar, which, as far as I could work out from how she was describing it, was like a shock collar.
Yeah. And I like that she just unashamedly was like, that's cool.
And everyone's going, is it though?
Yeah, is it? I mean, I sometimes play rude Scrabble, and when you start playing it, obviously words like bum and willy and all, like, you have rude words. But then after a while, you'll try and persuade your teammates that random words are rude if you say them rudely. Yeah. So if you say, I don't know, like lamp, but if you go lamp, it's suggestively rude. And it was like she did that with cool. She was like, that's cool. I'm like, is it?
If you keep saying it, it's still not cool.
Yeah.
I brought in a hot floor to make my bear dance. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, it's not so cool.
I have a dog whose job it is to bark when she hears a potential threat.
Oh.
It's very annoying in the modern world. So I've got her this blue collar that emits a tiny pss pss to stop her barking when she barks. Isn't that cool?
Is it cool?
Task one, rescue the cat. Best rescue wins. Your time starts now. The cat answers to the name Patatas.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
Oh, my God.
That's so interesting.
We've got a motif.
We've done it. This is an interestingly worded task because it's very open to interpretation. What makes a rescue good?
Yeah, although they all seem to go down the same road, which was just poke it out the tree.
Yeah.
Lob it out the tree was how they interpreted rescue.
Yeah, all sorts of things got thrown at that cat.
But what else could you have done? How else would you have approached that?
It's a really tricky one, but also I think they didn't stress enough in the wording of the task quite how strict Greg was going to be about the welfare of the cat.
Oh, I didn't interpret it that way either, though.
Yeah, so because obviously in the studio, Greg's saying, how dare you throw things at Patatas? You're treating Patatas awfully.
Yeah, yeah.
And if that, if they'd said in the task, this is the taskmaster's cat, he loves the cat, then maybe you might have done more. But
or
then best
they should have used a real cat and then people might have been a lot more Careful.
They should have
gaffer taped a real cat to a tree, and they'd have got different results.
No, I think you're right. There's kind of no other way to do it other than
how would
poke
you have
it
done it?
Or I probably just would have lobbed stuff at it, and then definitely tried to catch it, because Catherine won because she
caught it.
She treated it like a real cat.
Yeah.
So
no,
she
that
got
was
Alex
a nice
to catch
touch.
It. And she was talking to the cat throughout as if it was real, and
no, you're
calling
right.
to Patatas by name. So I think that was the key there. It was to the best rescue. You don't want to knock a cat out of a tree and then not.
No,
catch
you're
it
right. I didn't.
To the ground.
I didn't interpret it that way. I was just like, get it out quick.
Yeah.
Who
yeah,
could have foreseen?
Not...
That's how I would interpret.
Because it's not quickest. Because Joe did it in the quickest time, but he came third. Because he was throwing tennis balls and
yeah.
then he threw a football. And that's not the way you rescue a cat. I think the way to actually do it is probably with a long pole like Richard was trying to do.
Yeah, but appallingly.
Appallingly? And then he just gave up.
Yeah, he really lost his patience with that one. I hate that feeling. I do remember that feeling on a couple of tasks where you're like, I'm really not enjoying this.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it did involve cardboard, because the one I didn't enjoy was the tower with the boxes. And I remember thinking, I don't think there's anything good is going to come from this. I don't.
Yeah.
Cardboard is not a pleasing substance to... And I think Richard was trying to make a pole out of cardboard and it wasn't working out.
Yeah, just flopping over. Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Cardboard will often let you down.
Those tasks are really difficult, aren't they, when you feel like you're not doing it well. And also, I had a few of those where I'm like, I'm not doing this well, but I'm not doing it so badly that it's funny.
Yes, exactly that.
And then you start thinking, how is this going to be good telly? And you start getting really angry and that makes you worse at the
time.
And
then you're on the outside of yourself and you just, it's gone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then the crew are all looking at you like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, I had that feeling.
Even Gary the cameraman stopped smiling. You know, that's bad.
Prior to the catch, what had you thrown at the cat?
A football,
yep.
Some tennis balls,
yeah.
A tennis racket,
yep.
A lacrosse stick.
A lacrosse stick.
Croquet mallet, a crutch, and a space hopper.
Thanks.
My sort of plan was, if I don't rescue the cat, at least I can give it some things to play with in the tree.
John also called the cat a dick, and then he called me a dick, just so you know.
Let's move on to task two. Conceal this pineapple on your person. No part of the pineapple may be thrown away. You have 20 minutes, after which Alex will inspect you. Such a creepy sentence. most incorrect guesses wins. Your time starts now. I'll say straight away at the top, I think this is my favourite task in the series.
Yeah, definitely.
It's
a
so
great
good.
Task. Really
it's
good.
It's so good. And obviously features pineapples, which is a classic Taskmaster fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be excited to do this task, I think.
Didn't you do one similar with an aubergine?
We did. We had to. That was the first task that they showed, I think, on our series. Yeah, we had to hide three aubergines
similar.
In a room. Mm-hmm. Yeah, similar sort of thing. And I loved doing that. I loved trying to trip Alex up.
Yeah, that looked like a lot of fun.
I ripped the sofa open, pretending I was I was pretending I was in prison and they were searching for drugs. so much fun. Yeah, I would have loved this as well. What would have been your first thought when it came to the pineapple? How would you have
eaten or drunk any of it? I was surprised.
Really?
No, because I wouldn't have I would have assumed that wasn't allowed. That wasn't in the spirit of the thing.
Same with Catherine Ryan, so you're both rule followers.
Yeah. That I just would have thought, well, how can he possibly, that doesn't count. That's not the right approach. So I would have probably chopped it up really small, like maybe even diced it or minced it and just distributed it everywhere. I'd have gone for that kind of up my sleeves. I don't think anyone made good use of their sleeves. What about pipes?
Action.
Like a kind of pipe situation. So it was literally piped around your whole body. I think I'd have gone down that road.
I guess the issue with that technique of putting it everywhere is that every guess would be correct.
Yeah, you're right. John really smashed it, didn't he? Because he...
But I suppose that's kind of what John did, in that he hid it in 17 different places.
Yeah.
And somehow, I think maybe he just didn't cover. So he had 17 different places, but Alex incorrectly guessed 20 times.
It was a slightly wacky task, wasn't it? Like, it was a little bit interpretive, because I didn't know that you were going to get points for that. Like, I I didn't quite understand that you would get points for Alec guessing something and then it not being there.
Yeah.
And I probably would have benefited, like Catherine did, from Alex being a bit coy about female body parts. So I'd have just put it all in my bra and just hoped that he wouldn't want to say bra or tits. I mean, that would have been my approach.
It's such a good technique. You can always rely on Alex being embarrassed by the female body.
Yeah, I mean, it's a definite advantage for female contestants. When in doubt, stick it somewhere female and he will not draw attention to it.
Champion of Champions is going to just be him just blushing the whole time. There's three
me,
women
Lisa
in Champion
and Lou.
Of Champions.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Really exploit that, for sure.
Well, all our bras will just get bigger and bigger and bigger. Things we're stashing down there.
Even in tasks where you don't have to hide anything.
Yeah, totally. We'll hide each other in each other's bras.
John did do a great job. I initially thought it would be quite a bad job because he had a bowl of pineapple exposed on his head. And also a fly flew out of his sleeve.
That was great.
It's so good. Catherine, again, like you say, I think Catherine's technique was pretty good. She went with a sort of...
Hers was smooth. I loved her.
Yeah.
The efficiency of that. Where did she get that corset from?
I assume she brought that. She had that with.
She must just have that kicking around. A Spanx, a pineapple hiding Spanx bit of kit.
Great. And she did a sort of cling film nappy and then almost did like a drag tuck.
Oh, it was beautiful. I mean, it was like... good drug smuggling strategy. Like, that is a woman
really
who could come out of Colombia without anyone suspecting anything.
But what was funny about it is when she had all her clothes on, when she sort of covered it all up, it looked like great. You couldn't see pineapple there at all.
No.
And then when she revealed it,
a lot of
pineapple. Like, how did I not spot that?
Because wasn't she wearing a boiler suit at the beginning? So
yeah, she had the boiler suit on.
I
mean,
good old boiler suits, man. You can just shit yourself and nobody knows.
Well, good. At least people know if they ever see you wearing a boiler suit in public what's happened.
It's very possible I'm wearing a nappy under there.
Richard, I thought, should have been better at this because he only hit it in four places.
Yeah, he's got a lot of body mass.
Yeah, he's probably got like 150 places on his
totally.
Body.
Totally. Absolutely. Could have been, he could have had loads more hidden.
He's like a map of Britain. There's so many different places.
Yes.
Joe, obviously, just awful at that. Just terrible. He faked Alex out, though, which I think is kind of a key thing here. I wouldn't have thought that far ahead to fake Alex out, but Joe did do he had a roll of tape under his hat as a sort of obvious lump, and Alex thought there was pineapple under there. But so that was quite clever, but apart from that, he did not do very well.
But he was sticking to his tapas persona. Do not deviate from your persona.
Exactly. He was the anchovy.
Absolutely.
It was 5 points for John Richardson, 4 points for Catherine Ryan, 3 points for Richard Osman, 2 points for Doc Brown, and 1 point for the anchovy Wilkinson.
Have you got some in your bra?
No.
In the front area?
What do you mean the front area?
Sort of in your pants? Wow. There it is.
So task three... Quite often in these early series, there's like four film tasks. Whereas I think now this tends to be only three. But this third task takes two parts. So the first part is four of the contestants, apart from John, who get to set their own task. It's set a fun task. Your task must take no longer than 1 minute. You have 10 minutes. Your time starts now. Again, this would have panicked me hugely.
But you would, I think the advantage of being in one of the latter series is you would, because they're in the second series, they don't, like, they're quite simple tasks that they set, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But I guess they have to be if it's one that only takes 1 minute. I think John had to do them, part two is John had to do all the tasks set by the panellists and then in the studio had to guess who had set each task. And he is mortified when he finds out that no one else did these and that they're going to show a montage of it. But I think he did really well.
Do you?
Not with some, I mean...
Guessing he did really well.
Guessing he smashed it.
He smashed guessing. I couldn't believe how uncommitted he was to the makeup tutorial.
What a missed opportunity.
He could have camped his head off for that. He could have had a really good time.
But can you imagine that?
No, you're right. John wouldn't have done that.
Think of the tapas. Richardson's not doing that.
No, you're right. But I was like, come on, John.
He did it within his abilities.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think he did a good job of that. I think he did as well as he could at the William Tell Overture, which was Doc's task that he set.
Yeah.
If you listened to last week's episode of the podcast, to listeners, you would have heard Doc do a full rendition of the William Tell Overture. That's obviously a skill he has and decided to set as a task. The strongest one that Joe... I mean, it's a very funny task that Joe set. Prove how strong you are. Whoever looks the strongest wins.
There, yeah, that's funny.
But John didn't do a good job there. He just sort of meekly picked up a table.
Yeah, he could have made more of that.
Yeah. And then Richard Osman, quite a naughty task, I think. Enjoy this clip of the Taskmaster. Whoever finds it funniest wins. You have one minute. Your time starts now.
That's really cruel.
It's really cruel on poor John and on Greg, really. Imagine having to sit there watching someone else watch your stand-up.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's genius.
So, no, I don't think John did do well on watching Greg's stand-up. And at the end, he went, I've seen it before. Like, come on, mate. I would have been throwing myself into that. I would have been screaming, laughing. Oh, I would have tried to make myself cry.
Yeah, I'd have gone the other way, yeah. We'd have just bigged it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that would have been too much, though. It would have looked sarcastic after a while, but...
It's a risk worth taking.
John got 4 points there for guessing everyone's correctly.
He did really well.
But I think it was maybe easier to guess because the other people's task wasn't someone else will be choosing it, so make it seem like it's not yours.
Yeah, like Catherine's, of course it was Catherine, but if Catherine knew that she was going to be guest on that, she wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you had to set a task, Kerry, that took a minute, what sort of thing would you set? And it doesn't have to. It can sound like you. I'm not going to set it as a thing that other people are guessing.
Oh, do you know what? I don't know. I mean, a minute's just not long, is it?
It's really not.
It would be something like a ball getting in a goals or balls in a hoop or something. You know.
Yeah, something practical.
Like how many balls can you get through a net in a minute? And most wins. Something really ball based.
Bosh, ball bosh.
Yeah, exactly. There's an efficiency there that is non-negotiable. It's not interpretive. 10 balls, right, you get the points.
Task 4 is a team task. Using only the items on the rug, construct the best thing for the taskmaster. You have 30 minutes. Your time starts now.
Wow. I was really underwhelmed by what they achieved.
It was pretty bad. I think you and Jess would have smashed this.
Oh, man. I mean, straight off the bat, there were wheels there that were not exploited. I mean, I'd have made some sort of moving vehicle.
Yeah.
A little go-kart. I watched that episode with my 10-year-old son and we both were like, go-kart? Yeah. Absolutely, a go-kart, 100%.
Staring you in the face, a
staring
go-kart.
You in the face. Four wheels nicely laid out with poles that fit in the holes.
Yeah.
Bang.
Oh, it's a bang. That's a bang. That's not even a bosh. That's a bang.
And you could have had like a roof on it and you could have done all kinds of things with that go-kart. It could have had like cushions and plants. It could have been a den on wheels.
Well, Doc, Joe and Catherine were initially going to do a den. What I really liked about their effort is that without Catherine, that would have been nothing.
Oh, my God. Catherine was totally driving that project.
So Catherine drove the whole thing. And what I liked is they were just building stuff, putting together whatever Catherine told them to do. But then Catherine would change what it was every so often. She'd be like, it's a den. It's a tiki bar.
She what landed is a tiki bar? What is a tiki bar?
Like a sort of, is it Hawaiian based? It's sort of tropics based.
Right.
You know, like all the drinks would be like big pineapples with stuff coming out. And
lovely.
those like stone sculptures.
Nice touch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And actually,
that reminds me.
Greg loves a tiki bar.
Oh, he really enjoyed it. Well, let's face it. It was way better than the other one. But Joe in that was a massive pain in the arse. If he'd been in my group, I'd have banished him. I'd have just said, go, just go, Joe.
Well, do you want to know what my note is about that?
Go on.
I am like Joe whenever I build a flat pack with my girlfriend.
Well, it could end a relationship, that kind of attitude.
Yeah, I mean, she just gets on with it and then I stand around going, oh, there's no point. This is awful. John and Richard were, if anything, worse. I mean, Catherine is the only good person in this task, I think. John and Richard just, it's like they had a breakdown.
It is like watching, you know, those documentaries where they get kids like 7 Up or whatever. It was like one of those where like that child psychologist with the moustache kind of voices of ET of children sort of in a room with some clay. It was
They let them get on with it, and they're like, what do children do when we're not there?
What do children do when we're not watching? And it was exactly like one of those.
Because all that stuff in front of you, I mean, sure, my first thought wouldn't be a tiki bar, but it certainly wouldn't be a tickle station.
That was weird. I mean, I don't know what was going on with Richard and John.
Was that Richard's suggestion?
I don't know. I mean, Richard's hair went out of place. I've never seen Richard look so pissed. He looked like he'd been at a tiki bar and then someone had said, right, you got to make something. He was like, oh, all right. I mean, it was very entertaining to watch those two. They looked like they'd had about 3 glasses of wine.
Yeah.
Like mid-drunk.
Exactly. But yeah, I think you would have had to have a couple of glasses of wine to come up with a tickle station. That sounds like something you'd see at like a fetish convention.
Yeah, like, it was brilliant. And the little
going,
tent...
Oh, it was tickle station.
Yeah, but you to do it undercover, so it has
yeah,
to be
you could, could. I don't like to see the hands.
Yeah.
I don't want to know whose they are.
The hands could just go anywhere. Let's keep it a secret.
And all Richard does is he just... Whatever they're building at the time, because they change it around a little bit as well... Because John starts doing a German accent at one point, and then Richard just keeps saying Greg's going to love it. He just goes, Greg's going
to
love it.
Because you've been on your own a lot, and then when you finally get to be with some of your teammates, you can just become overwhelmed with giddiness, can't you? And that's what I think we were watching with John and Richard.
I think they
were just so happy to see each other and hang out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That one, watching John and Richard, it reminded me of me and Jess making a den. When we had to make a den, and we just we were just having a lovely day out. There were moments where you're like, oh, are we being timed or filmed? What's happening?
It was 4 points for Doc, Joe and Catherine, and a deserved 1 point for John and Richard. A continually terrible episode for Richard Osman.
I cannot tell you how disappointed I am with this. Wait, this is nonsense, isn't it? It's some metal, some plastic,
maybe,
and a cloth.
This
could be horseshit. I don't know if I'm sort of the only one who thinks this isn't anything.
So it is studio task time, which was create the highest tower using only these potato-based items.
Patatas
again.
Yes.
Your potato tower must be self-standing. Your potato tower must be built on the table. Your potato tower will be measured from the tabletop to the highest potato point. You have 100 seconds. Again, this is a potato episode.
Yeah.
Hard. I think this is one of the ones where I might have had a little meltdown if it didn't work properly and ended up throwing potatoes everywhere.
I found the studio tasks my least favourite tasks.
Yeah.
It was a different vibe to being in the house or... You know, doing
more pressured.
More pressure. I don't know what it's like now without an audience. That must be completely different. Then you must just feel like a person having a breakdown. Like,
yeah.
Literally. I mean, as we often do in stand-up, there is that fine line where you're like, is this an art form or is this a breakdown? I don't know where that line is. And I felt like that on the studio tasks.
Yeah, I think that... I quite liked the studio tasks when the audience were cheering and like going, come on, and shouting for you. And it felt a bit, you know, it felt fun. It felt like you were doing the Generation Game or something.
Yeah. Crackerjack.
But then there's somewhere, there's such like small things you were doing and really having to focus. And there's not much for the audience to look at.
No.
So there's dead silence and there's an audience watching you do something really weird. And then you get in your own head and think, this is bizarre.
Really bizarre.
It takes you out of it a bit.
Yeah.
No, I can't imagine doing it without an audience. That must feel really weird.
Mm.
Would you have had a technique with the potato based items?
I probably would have gone down the way Joe did. I'd have used the waffles and gone square and gone logical.
It feels like the only way to do it. But then Doc is the only person with a self standing tower. At the end, everyone else is touching the towers.
That was chaos. That was chancy chaos, which is a word I just made up.
I absolutely love it, and I'm going to continue to use it along with human tapas. What a lot this episode has given me.
Well, whenever we end up doing a podcast together, we have a language-based sort of splinter conversation about words.
So that was chaos. You're right.
It was total chaos.
I would have been very frustrated with that. So So the final scores for this episode, Doc is the winner with 18, closely followed by John on 17, Catherine on 15. Always consistent, Catherine. I think that's how she got the victory.
And she won, didn't she? Yeah.
She won the series, yeah. She was a very consistent competitor. Joe got 12 points, and Richard, awful episode for Osman. He must still be kicking himself about this. Five points. Less than half of the person above
For him. Such a capable man, that is very disappointing.
Yeah, very disappointing. We've got a few emails from listeners, Kerry. We might have covered some of it, but we'll have another quick chat around it. Question for Kerry Godliman. This is from Abby in Portsmouth. Mm-hmm. Who do you think is going to be your biggest competition on the Champion of Champions? Can't wait
you.
To see it.
It will be you.
Do you think it's me?
Yeah, because everyone I've spoken to said it's Ed. Look out for Ed.
Because I'm just so barefaced competitive.
Well, and you're good at it. You're hosting a podcast on it.
That's true. And I don't think that means I'm good at it. I think that means I'm just an absolute nerd. And I really am a nerd for this show. And I would still be a nerd for this show if I hadn't done it.
Well, I think that love will win out. And I think you will reign the glory of that love.
I hope so. I hope we are all competitive, but I hope we're all not really competitive all of the time.
I can't see it.
It's going to be a nightmare, Kerry.
Don't think that human tapas is going to bring that vibe. I just don't see you, Lou, Lisa and Richard and me being that. Do you know what I mean? I think it'll be fun.
But is it human tapas now? Because it's human tapas in the initial series, right? But is this not just a plate of patatas bravas?
Now you've got five winners, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like in the other Champion of Champions?
I think they were all quite different, weirdly. I think we're more similar as a lineup than they were as the other Champion of Champions.
Oh, so really?
I don't think we've got five Boshers.
We haven't got five Boshers, and we haven't got five, like, Bob Mortimer kind of, you know, like, wacky. It's not that
no,
sort of angle.
Lou's the closest to
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah,
vibe.
Lou can bring
So
that.
maybe it's more tapas. It's more tapas than I was giving it credit for.
It's all to play for, Ed. It's all to play. When it can hang on one point, who knows which way the wind's going to blow on this one.
Yeah. this is an email from Sarah in Rochester. Kerry, we saw that you keep your Series 7 trophy in your garage. Mm. Now, in case people can't remember that, on Series 9, the series that I was on, Katie Wicks brought in, I believe one of her prize tasks was...
Steal
your
something.
Trophy. Yeah, it was steal something from someone else's house, and it was the trophy that you won, because it was just knocking around in your garage.
Yeah, it still is.
And it still is. Katie brought it back to you?
Katie brought it back, and it's still in my garage.
Well, you can see mine taking pride of place in my office, just behind me there.
Oh, God, yeah. Wow. But
yours got... Did it immediately go in the office? Was it displayed at all?
It went straight in the garage. It's weird and creepy, and I do not want it in my living space.
This is from Jennifer in Surrey. What do you see next for Donna and Donna on your soap opera cul-de-sac? You are my favourite contestant ever.
Oh, Donna and Donna could go in any direction. I mean, there's so much potential for Donna and Donna.
Especially, I believe that to be true.
Yeah, totally. Especially that you've got a caravan. It's got wheels. It could go anywhere. I mean, it literally could go anywhere. They could go on the road. It's a road movie. Donna and Donna go around the UK with Alex.
I feel like... You can easily make a web series of Donna and Donna.
Yeah.
I'd love to watch it. I think you could film in the Taskmaster caravan, because if you text Alex and ask him for something, he always says yes, because he's the nicest man in the world.
He's just the nicest man ever.
I think Alex spends probably 20 hours of the day coming up with tasks and filming Taskmaster, and then the other four not sleeping but doing birthday messages for people.
I mean, my son played the Taskmaster theme tune on the piano at Christmas time, and I sent it to Alex, and then Alex sent me a lovely little video back of him congratulating my son on his... It was just so kind of him, and my son was so chuffed. It was so sweet, and he must do that all day.
Yeah. All day. I can't think how much money you would make if you did one of those. You know, people can do messages for money now.
Yeah. No, so he doesn't like a do service. It for money. He's just an altruistic beast.
Me, if anyone asked me for a birthday message, nope.
£50. Five grand.
This is from Jerry in NYC. I don't know if it's Jerry Seinfeld, but thanks for listening, Jerry. We saw you standing for Katie Wicks when she was ill. If Greg Davis became unwell, how would you fancy your chances as the Taskmaster?
Oh, my God. I would love it.
I think you'd be great.
I'd love to be the Taskmaster.
I think you'd be really good. I
oh
think
my God, that's never occurred to me, and now I'm ecstatic with the thought.
I think you're a perfect balance between sort of... I think you'd give harsh but fair judgments.
Harsh but fair is one of my key phrases.
And you wouldn't take any shit from anyone.
And I celebrate creativity, but I also applaud efficiency.
Oh, great. And I'd actually love to see you in the massive chair.
I'd love to be in the massive chair. But what Greg... one of my favourite moments ever is when Greg picked... Did he pick James up and turn him upside down?
Yes, he did, yeah.
I mean, I couldn't bring that sort of physical presence to the role.
The physical presence wouldn't be there. But you'd fill that role very well, I think.
Oh, man.
I'd like to see you in the big chair, and weirdly, I'd like to see you do it in one of Greg's suits.
Yes, yeah. I'd happily be the Taskmaster all day
I think
long.
You'd be one of the best choices out of previous contestants. I'm just saying that.
I'm over the moon with that.
Greg's also let us know on this podcast before that he will have to die before anyone else is a taskmaster.
That could happen. That could happen. That might happen. I'm not saying anything more.
Now, Kerry, at the end of the Taskmaster podcast, we like to ask our guests to rate their experience on the podcast between 1 and 5 points. Now, I'm not going to tell you what the average score is. I just want
about
you
how
to,
they feel about it,
but how you feel about the experience of being on the podcast and how much you've enjoyed it, or how much you feel like you've got out of it.
Five.
Yes, good. Thank
five
you.
Five out now, of five, all the way.
Well, thank you very much. I will take that 5 points gladly. And I will see you in the studio for Champion of Champions.
It's on, Bosh.
There we go. A great episode with Kerry there. We will, of course, talk to Kerry again, probably when we come around to chatting about Series 7, I'd imagine. If she would like to come back on, I think she had a nice time. She rated it highly. But don't forget, next week, Taskmaster Series 11 starts, and we'll be talking about that 18th of March, 9 p.m. on Channel 4, straight after. Pop back, listen to the podcast episode with a special guest. We'll be chatting all about that episode. I believe the opening guest we have is Richard Herring, champion of Series 10. We thought that was a good way to kick things off. And also, Richard loves talking about Taskmaster. He just loves talking, doesn't he? So come back here on March 18th to listen to that. Go and listen to the next episode of this podcast, which actually is talking about Series 2, Episode 5. It's out now with Richard Osman. But for now, we will see you again. Well, immediately, if you go and listen to the next one. See you in a bit. Bye!